Welcome back to the Compass live stream, the only live stream about proof of work mining, and therefore, coincidentally, the best live stream about proof of work mining. We're glad to have you watching with us again today. We have an incredibly full house of guests for this Wednesday afternoon's live stream. Probably one of the live streams I'm most excited for, talking all about at-home mining with a bevy of very experienced at-home miners with a variety of different setups that we'll dig into and explore later in the show. But the point is, super excited for this. It's going to be an awesome live stream. Glad to have you watching with us. And as always, shout out to my co-host, Will. Will, thanks for being here. This is going to be a great one.
Totally. Yeah, I've been building out my own at-home mining setup for a little Compass video project right now, and it's pretty bare bones. So I'm excited to see what the crew here has on the technical front to kind of make this setup a little bit more interesting and probably a lot better than I have it going right now.
Yeah. So just as a preview of what's coming, all the guests on today's show sent over some media, pictures, videos, that sort of stuff, about showing different parts of their setup. And we're going to dig into all that in a little bit. So everyone watching gets to see, you know, five different types of setups from our guests. Before we get into all this, though, if you're watching, be sure to like and subscribe to our channel, this video, etc. Not only does it help other miners find the content, but it makes Will and I feel good about ourselves. If you're listening to the podcast, we appreciate you listening, but we promise the video version is better. And you're going to, I guess, miss out on a lot of cool stuff that we're going to show later in the episode here. So without any further ado, I want to give all our guests a chance to introduce themselves, you know, tell us a little bit about how they got into mining and sort of how they got into Bitcoin, I guess, in general. Eric, we can start with you and then we'll just sort of go around. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into mining, how you got into Bitcoin, I guess, more generally, and what you're up to these days?
I'm a machinist at the railroad, and just I work with electricians pretty closely, three-phase electric, a lot of that kind of stuff, and also AC and DC power. I just was reading about Bitcoin one day. I knew my brother was into it a little bit, and we were sitting at the bar, and I said, well, I think it's time for me to buy some, and bought some Bitcoin. Next thing you know, the price goes up, and we kind of decided that at some point, you're either going to have to do something with the Bitcoin that you own, because you don't want to work your fiat job anymore, or you're going to have something that's going to have some sort of passive income. And we wanted to stay with Bitcoin. So we ended up starting to buy miners. And then from there, we had to start to build an infrastructure to run it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I guess it's kind of cool now because you see, you know, most people like log in for better or worse to like your Coinbase or I guess Cash App or wherever and buy Bitcoin as their first exposure. But more and more people are sort of getting into like actually mining themselves, whether at home or through a hosted solution, is one of their first, if not their first exposure to Bitcoin. Misagi, you mind going next? Tell us a little bit about, you know, yourself, how you got into Bitcoin and mining and what you're up to.
Sure. Yeah, I was a software developer for a long time, and paid okay, but still felt like the goalposts were moving for the things I wanted to buy, like saving up for a house, and so we started to look into, hey, what if I made my own like money software, like PayPal did it? Why can't I? And then found Bitcoin and realized, oh, somebody already did it and they're going to make all the money, and kind of ignored it for a little bit. But I did eventually try to install the software and mine a little bit of CPU. I think I checked that wallet a few months ago and it had $80 on it after 10 years or whatever, which I thought was cool that it was still there. The bank didn't close my account after 10 years of inactivity or anything like that. But notice that, you know, you didn't earn much mining on a CPU, just a laptop. So when Butterfly Labs announced their pre-sale, I actually sent them the money, and lo and behold, I actually got one and mined for a little while with that ASIC, and then eventually sold it on eBay. And so the bug kept coming up, you know, every cycle when the price would rally, I should have mined a whole lot more of this stuff. And ended up doing some GPU mining with probably 9 graphics cards in my garage. And then this last go around, I started mining to heat my office, just because we were all home for the last year, and in Minnesota the temps get cold enough where you need some extra heat if you have an office in your garage. And then this year, when I saw uh, I I really got scammed in the Michael Bitstein, everyone is a scammer sense of the word, by Compass Mining to hand over my Bitcoins in exchange for some miners, and ended up taking delivery of some miners that way. Probably a few more than I was expecting to have on hand. And so it was kind of thrust into doing slightly larger scale at home mining than I expected.
Jumping in head first or maybe feet first in the deep end. That's always, you know, maybe a little intimidating or nerve wracking at first, but fun to look back on in hindsight. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing. Just as a reminder, all these guys are also on Twitter, and all of them have, you know, very voicey and opinionated accounts. They're fun to follow. You can find their accounts in the show notes below this YouTube video. Throw them a follow. Eric, going to throw it to you. Or sorry, we just ran through Eric. Bob, going to toss it to you next. Bitcoin coder Bob, love the shades. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into Bitcoin and mining?
Sure. Well, I'm currently a shadowy super coder over at Voltage. Check us out. We make Bitcoin infrastructure easy. With the Lightning Network exploding, you're going to hear our name more and more. My foray into Bitcoin started in 2013. I actually had given a presentation in college about how was the internet of money. I was a computer science and business major, so that topic kind of made sense to me, where we finally need money for the internet. But I really didn't grasp it until 2017, when I was working at a company and someone was running a journal club. And so the very first scientific paper I read as a part of that club turned out to be Satoshi's white paper. And at that point, that's when it clicked for me. That was my moment. And from there on, I went down the rabbit hole. But my mining intro did not start until about 2018. Once I kind of understood the concept of dollar cost averaging, something that this is a space I wanted to be in for a long time. At the time, unfortunately, I was not going to be able to host a miner myself, just given where I was living and the electric rates I was paying. But in February, I came across EconoAlchemist, very famous guide, and he phrased it, and tell me if I'm misquoting you, but dollar cost averaging in through your electricity bill. And that was my second, oh my God, that's a fantastic way to do this. I want to be in this for a long time. I want to dollar cost my average in, and this is just a great way to do that. So I started stacking sats with my miner back in May is when I fired it up. And it's been a great journey since. Look forward to talking about it for the rest of this stream.
That's awesome. That's a great sort of series of events there. You said you started mining in May. I was excited there for a minute when you said you started in, 2018, started mining the bottom, and you could have like an awesome triumphant story there of stacking sats all the way up. But what a little bit later, who cares? The grand scheme of things. Nobody. Callie, next to you, just same question. Tell us a little about yourself, how you got into mining, what you're up to.
Yeah. I mean, my story is pretty similar to everybody else's. Heard about Bitcoin early on, never really did anything with it. Wasn't at a place in my life. Was really focused on my career. I'm in sales management, so I'm probably maybe a little older than everybody here. And, I'm in the corporate world still. But in 2017, got introduced to Bitcoin and really went down the rabbit hole big time. Started buying kind of immediately, and that just wasn't enough. And then from there, jumped in with some S7s, and didn't get much time with those until I had to turn around, I think, at the beginning of 18 and upgrade to the S9s. And I've kind of been mining pretty much off and on since then. Been doing it in the basement. I had a kind of an open space. We can get into that later, but I used it for heat in the winters and when the electricity is a little bit cheaper. And I have to say, I'm a leap first, look later kind of guy. And I think the best way to kind of learn about Bitcoin is just to jump in. And obviously, I don't think I have some of the technical prowess as some of the other people that are actually coding and doing some of these big things. And I think the one thing I would say about myself, if I can do it, anybody can do it. So I appreciate the invite, Will and Zach.
No, appreciate having you on. And that last bit you just said is awesome, because I think what's beautiful about the panel group, whatever you want to call it, we have today, is there is definitely, varying degrees, especially amongst Will and myself too, of technical prowess or skills and abilities. Everyone can mine Bitcoin. The learning curve might be a little bit steeper for some people, but still very doable. And on that note, our last guest produces a ton of content, as I think Bob just mentioned, that helps people, you know, get started mining. Econo Alchemist, also very glad to have you on the show. Thanks for being here. Can you just give us a quick rundown of your history also, like how you got into Bitcoin mining and Bitcoin, and also, you know, what gave you sort of the bug to create all this awesome content that we're all familiar with?
Sure, yeah. I also work in the railroad industry during the day. And end of 2018, we had a little bit of money that we wanted to start doing something with. So I tried day trading and lost about one third of my money. And a family member mentioned Bitcoin, and I got interested in it initially because I wanted to turn a small amount of money we had into a large amount of money. But I fell down the rabbit hole pretty hard. And once I started realizing the kinds of problems that Bitcoin solves around permission, around censorship, the price action really started fading away from my focus. And I really started trying to figure out how to use this to solve the problems I faced my whole life working blue collar jobs and just never feeling like I can catch up or keep up, and you know, getting turned away from banks, having the funds in the bank's custody, and then like getting taken away in fees or just not having that control. So, you know, when I found that I could really take control of my financial life with Bitcoin, that's when I really started focusing on that. And then the, you know, when Coinbase came out and announced that they were working with three-letter agencies to provide chain analysis services, that was a big pivoting point for me. Because prior to that, I didn't really understand the dangers of KYC and what kind of risks were associated with that piece of it. You know, the self-custody part of it made a lot of sense to me from the get-go, but the KYC piece of it didn't really click until I realized what Coinbase was doing. So, you know, at that point, I made the decision that I was going non-KYC and I was never looking back. And, you know, this is about midway through 2020. And I was really looking for ways to accumulate more Bitcoin, you know, similar to how you dollar cost average with KYC exchanges. But to do it in a way that didn't involve KYC. And I was racking my brain. And then Diverter came out with this guide right around the halving called Mining in the Streets. And that guide just opened my eyes to mining, because prior to that, all the narratives in the industry were that you can't mine Bitcoin at home. So I never really even considered that as an option until I read Diverter's guide. But having read that, it really opened my eyes. And I decided at the end of 2020 to buy an ASIC, and I received it and plugged it in January of this year. And it was, it really answered all my, it was the solution to a lot of problems for me. So I wanted to share that knowledge and experience and put it out there. So I, you know, put this guide together and just tried to detail every step that I went through so anyone else could look at that information and kind of take it from there on their own. And, you know, the last 9 months have been pretty active. There's been a pretty good response to mining at home.
I'm not going to lie. And whenever we have someone from the railroad industry or oil and gas industry, definitely feel a little bit emasculated just working in media. But I want to pivot the conversation a bit to tips and tricks for new miners. So we have a lot of new miners at Compass. They buy an ASIC through us and then they want to put it in their garage, figuring out how to do it. That's me currently this week, figuring out all like the baby steps to get there. And I'm wondering if you guys can shed some wisdom and some light on the subject. What are some tips that you wish you would have had when you were setting up your home mine? Econo Alchemist, I'm actually going to throw it right back to you for that one. And then we'll kind of move around the panel. If we have any like overlap, feel free to interject and just kind of make it a more of a conversation on this.
Sure. Yeah. Question. You know, I think the first thing people need to be prepared for is, you know, you're going to have to exhibit a certain amount of trust, and you want to be careful about getting scammed. There's the hardware market is riddled with scammers, and you just really want to be careful about who you're working with. You know, reputations go really far. So I always advise people to be careful about getting scammed when they're trying to buy hardware. It's a lot of money. And especially if you're spending Bitcoin, there's absolutely no recourse for you to get that Bitcoin back. So you just want to be really careful and make sure you're working with someone that you're comfortable enough with to hand over those kinds of funds. So that's why I always recommend people start with that hardware market verified list. The hardware market verified listings channel. Kaboom Racks posts in there, Mine Farm Buy posts in there. There's a lot of reputable sellers in there. I was really excited when Compass Mining came out with the home mining web store. I think that's fantastic. First I'd say just be careful about scammers. And then once you get the hardware, you're going to have a lot of heat and a lot of noise that you need to deal with. So while your ASIC is in transit, you want to be thinking about how you're going to take this piece of industrial grade equipment and put it in your living space. If you have roommates or family, this is going to be a lot for them to deal with. So you want to use whatever you can to kind of mitigate those problems. So, as we've all experienced, we've come up with clever ways to vent the air or to suppress the noise and to get this equipment installed in our homes in a way that we can still live with.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, if I had gone back, location is key. Who's living in your house? Where are you going to play? Where are you going to actually place these things? And then the big one, I think, is heat as well. Is what are you going to do with this extra heat? I think in the winter months, you can get really creative with it. And I've used it to heat my basement for years. But in the summer months, it's something to kind of, it's a force to be reckoned with. I picked up Wutz Miner, the M21S, and decided just to set it up in the basement and, we'll see how it kind of goes. And I did that in July and it must've been 89 degrees down there. It was smoking. So, my wife's like, this is not going to work. It sounds like an airplane's taking off. The other two are bad enough, figure it out. And that's when, I start cutting holes in the side of my house. So you got to have somebody that's on board with you because I kid you not. And this is a funny story. Zach, I sent you a video of this because it actually went off this morning, but probably 2 weeks ago, I roll over in bed and I can't find my wife. And I'm like, what in the hell? I walk out, leave our bedroom and she's on the back deck. And I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I swear I heard a tornado siren. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She goes, come in that. And we came in the house and it was the miners, the hum of the miners. And it really does. I took a video of it, but it sounds like from inside the house, a tornado siren's going off. She was freaked out. And that's what's led me kind of last 2 weeks, stuffing a bunch of soundproofing foam all over this room that's in a far corner of my house in the basement, probably 100 and some feet away from my bedroom. I mean, I think the technical stuff around electricity and, the panel and, you got some railroad guys who deal with some high, voltage situations and they're very comfortable with that. But your average Joe, when you're telling them, hey, you're going to take a 4-inch hole saw, pust it through your house, you're going to cut through a floor joist, maybe you can notch it out with this much room and you're going to be fine. And then, so just take that 10 gauge wire. You want to pop open your pan. I mean, no. And I really recommend get a qualified electrician to come in and put the receptacles where you need them so you don't kill yourself or burn your house down. I mean, that's just kind of where I'm at. But I think location. What are you going to do with the noise and what are you going to do with the heat and who else are you going to bother with this? Cause I don't care how loud it is. I'll deal with it. But we have people over and they're like, what is happening in the back? And I'm like, well, let me come tell you. And that's rule number two. I got two rules in life. One, I can't talk about. Two is don't talk to everybody about Bitcoin anymore. They don't want to hear it.
The rule of don't kill yourself and burn the house down is probably very choice advice for everybody getting into mining. Misagi, same thing from you. Like one piece of advice that you wish or more, I don't care, that you wish you had before you started mining. What is it?
I think not turning it off. Back when I was doing GPU mining, software can crash your PC updates. And it's, you go, oh, it's just too much trouble to, I can deal with that tomorrow. And with the prices of miners these days, you're really putting capital to work. This is a business. And, you know, as employees, we're used to someone telling us, hey, go get this done. I have deadlines. When it's your own business, you're the one who has to go, hey, that thing's down because it needs to be vented, or my circuit breaker needs a bigger thing. Like, you got to take care of that, because that's your capital dissolving if the miner's not running. You know, every day that it's not running means hash rate's increasing next week, and you're going to get that much less return on your initial investment. So yeah, don't turn it off. Keep that sucker on, and then filter your air. I've lost a lot of hardware, especially in the Midwest. We get cottonwood trees out here, and that stuff just clogs things up. And so now I run air filtration and get a little more longevity.
Totally. Bob, I want to hand it to you and see if there's anything else that, any like tips or tricks that the others on the panel haven't really picked up yet. I feel like we could kind of talk about this tips and tricks all day long, because there's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah, there are. A big one with me, you know, I was buying a machine that I thought would be new. It was being delivered from China. And I guess whenever you buy anything from China, you don't really know what you're going to get. When I did get it and I just ran my fingers over it, I had just dirt all over them. And I knew that this puppy had either been sitting on a warehouse floor for some time, or it had been running. You know, why wouldn't they have run it? There's almost no way for me to tell if they had used it or not. So my piece of advice would be, if you find that that's the case and you really didn't get a new machine, go ahead and clean that before you spin it up. It's going to help your hash rate. It's going to help the longevity of it. And it's going to help you sleep better at night, knowing that there's not something in there that's going to catch fire because it came dirty. And then the second thing I would say, and this is actually something Econo mentioned to me, is the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And what I mean by that is, if you have questions, you need to speak up. You need to do your due diligence beforehand, so you come in with an informed question. But this is a community that really will go out of their way to help and answer your questions, whether that be Twitter, or I also found that the Bitcoin Talk forum, it's just full of experts and people that are going to help you run the numbers and get your question answered.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll just chime in on that last note there. Steve Barber from Upstream recently made an at-home mining Telegram group that's full of people, you know, working through some of these problems or offering advice to help others work through them. Compass also has a channel like that in our company Discord. And like you said, all over Twitter, there's like, if you look at stats on the mining Reddit forums, are exploding. Like, these communities are full and active and growing very quickly. So if you have questions, like on this hour, we're not going to answer all your questions about at-home mining for people watching. This is just sort of, you know, like an appetizer. But there's tons of information and tons of people giving it across the internet. You got to kind of put in some work there. But if you have a question, you know, people will answer it. Eric, last but definitely not least, if you have anything else to add, like what's one or more piece of advice, you know, you wish you had before you started mining that you want to impart to viewers?
Yeah, it seems like everybody kind of touched on everything I was kind of looking at. Like Misagi said, keep it clean. We probably clean ours once a month because it is so bad. The air quality is, you know, and then you've got 140 degrees coming out the backside of them, those Watts miners. It gets pretty warm. Like, I've got mine in my basement, or one of them, I shouldn't say all of them, but anyhow, it keeps the air conditioner working, you know, and then, those Watts miners are, the fan pitch varies a lot, you know, so it's almost where the, like, even an overclocked S9 is so much easier to put up with if you duck that into your heating system, you know, and it mutes it down and pushes a lot of air. It feels like the furnace is on all the time and you really don't hear it as much. But when you're running them Watts miners, those Watts miners are changing pitch constantly and it's hard to get along with. And then also, I struggled with realizing that a continuous duty draw is a lot different than like motor brake amp current, you know, like where a motor starts and you're drawing the most amount of power when it starts out. So you, like, say you got that Watts miner is 15 amps. I kept wanting to relate it to more of like motor brake horsepower, but that's a continuous 15 amps. So when you have to rate your infrastructure, rate everything that you're building to run that, it has to be 1.5 times higher than what that current draw is. And that took me a little bit to figure out. I burned up some stuff.
I have questions about you connecting to your HVAC system. I wanted to do that. Do you push the air into your return or like after the furnace fan?
It's after the furnace fan, even though we were still running the furnace fan to keep the air moving throughout the house, keep our cold air return working and all that. But it's actually after the furnace fan, and you can shut the furnace fan off and it doesn't even seem like you shut it off, you know? And we had 3 S9s and they are overclocked, and it was a little bit much to run on 120 volt, 20 amp circuit. We did burn up a couple of, outlets, but you know, you think about how that spade goes into that outlet, there isn't much surface area there. So you can run into a lot of high resistance and eventually it will fail.
That's awesome. That, yeah, I guess, you know, you kind of have to, expect some burnt up, materials along the way as you set up your rig, which is the best segue I can offer into the next part of the show, showcasing, the rigs you guys have set up at home. Like I mentioned at the start of the show, everybody on the show, except for Will and I, sent in, you know, a bunch of cool pictures. And I think we have probably one video from everybody, most everybody showing different parts of their setup. So we're just going to rifle through. We want you take as much time as you want to talk about your setups. And I'm not kidding. Like some of these are very cool, and this is not a critique, very cool because of how like hacked together they are. And also because of how like intricately designed some of them are. We have a bevy of them and a huge variety among them. So I'm pumped to get through this. Bitcoin coder Bob, we're going to toss the baton to you first. Give Damien 2 seconds to pull up the media on the screen. All your media is preloaded here. And Damien's just going to shuffle through pictures. Just, you know, you can tell us what we're looking at or just give us the story of how you, you know, came to build it to what it looks like now. Whatever you want. It's your time. The floor is yours. And Damien's just going to shuffle through some pictures, maybe a couple times even, if depending on how long you want to explain for. But yeah, the floor is yours, Bob. Take it away.
Okay, cool. Yeah, what we're looking at here in the first photo, and I should start by saying I probably have the most Bush League thrown together setup of all the ones we're going to see. So take that with a grain of salt. And I'm not that handy of a guy, but I did make it work. What we're looking at here is just the outside of the house view. I have that big piece of wood covering some of the metal ducting because the sun shines directly on that. And I found that, you know, that's actually just not helping with the heat unless I have that piece of wood there. So that little piece of shielding actually did help and bring my fans down a little bit on the RPM. You can also see on the bottom corner there is the AC unit. So I wanted to make sure that I wasn't feeding hot air directly into my AC unit. So that's why I did stagger it a little bit to the left of the window. If we go to the next picture, we can actually see it without the wood. Not that one. It's basically the same picture without the wood. Yeah, there it is. So that's what it looks like behind the wood. In the middle there, kind of where you see the metal hanger strap, I actually have an inline 6-inch fan in there that helps expel some of that hot air through the vent there. To seal that with the window, I just have a piece of wood. I used a hole saw to cut through. You know, that's not an airtight hole. Again, really just not a great job with this. The other thing that piece of wood helps with is you can see there that there's kind of that window egress to keep some of the rain out of there as well. If we go to the diagram photo, I think it's a little pen and paper photo. Yeah, that one. So this was kind of my original vision and more or less what I ended up going with. So what we have here is the miner in the middle, and the entire thing is encased in a big, like a 72 quart cooler. It's giant. And what I wanted to do was, to make sure that, it was airtight on both sides so that, the air being expelled wasn't going to be, sucked into the intake air. So I used some, they're not shrouds. What are they called? They're register boxes. And I was able to pick those up at my local hardware store. And using that and some foil tape, I was able to make a good seal, which we can see in one of the other photos. But basically, that whole connection is to keep everything airtight. Yeah, so that's a good bird's eye view of in the cooler there. This is before I used any of the foil tape, so it's not airtight. I actually line the bottom with some carpet to help with any vibrations. And so we have the register boxes there on either side, also connected to a reducer from a 6-inch to a 4-inch piece. And then those run out either side of the cooler that I cut through with a 6-inch hole saw. So really nothing too special. If we go to the one of the other pictures where it just shows what it looks like sitting in that room in the basement. Yep, that's it. And so you can see I have threaded the Ethernet, that white Ethernet cable, as well as the 12-gauge power cable through that intake hole. It was either going through that hole or cutting a hole through the side to feed those wires in, but they really don't get in the way. And then I just added a pretty simple fan in front of it to get some better airflow. I'm pretty sure I don't need to run that. I've run it without it. But I just keep it there. And then a box fan to circulate some even more air into the room. This really is just a storage room. So you can see a drum set that I have there that I don't have set up. It does collect a fair amount of dust and I'm overdue for a cleaning. And actually in the very bottom of this photo, you can see on that shelf, I have, there's an inline black fan there that I'm not using. Originally I had a good idea that I would put that on the intake hole of the cooler, and that would help feed a lot of air into the miner and actually cause their fans to run at a lower rate, and with the idea of making the whole system more quiet. I also was under the impression that the entire cooler would keep the fans quiet and reduce some of the noise. That is not the case. From this view that we're looking at here, I took a decibel reading, and from right there, it's 57 decibels. And when I'm standing right where that front fan is, it's about 62 decibels. I think we do have a video of that. So right here, I'm not sure
if we have the audio. Sound of that by chance? I don't know if it can pick up the sound from here.
Yeah, it's not important. We all know what that sounds like. That is running at 62 decibels there, according to my app. And so while the cooler was a big fail, and I probably actually didn't need it, and I could have just run the ducting, what I ended up doing to reduce the noise was a very simple solution. I just installed a door to my basement. I did not have a door on there prior and went and got a door and installed that on, which actually might've been the most difficult part of the entire miner setup. Installing doors on those hinges is not easy as a one man job.
Yeah.
When I'm outside that door, it's only at about 32 decibels. And then when I'm outside, from the street view, it's only, 52 decibels, and with the AC unit running at 62 decibels. So the AC is actually louder than the miner. So it is pretty discreet, especially with that wood covering it.
I have to say that in the first photo, I noticed a box of banana bread sitting out.
Yeah, you might notice it in the background of my current room right now as well.
I think it's the next one.
There's one right there.
Yeah. Banana bread maximalist.
One follow-up for you. So when we're looking at these at-home mining setups and we see people do it in their basement, a big consideration is making sure that you can get that 240 volt connection wherever you want to place your mine. But you necessarily probably need to bust through some walls to get that circuit to the right place in the house. It depends on your house. Like if you have a crawl space, you can just wire it through that. But when you're setting up your own home mine, how did you kind of consider where you're going to put that connection? Did you have a 240 already in that area and you didn't have to worry about moving through some timber lines or anything like that?
No, that was definitely a big consideration when I went through this. I knew that I had circuit breaker space to handle it. And I knew that even with the miner, I'd be respecting the 80% rule. I was able to tap on a friend who's an electric apprentice, and he came out and scouted it and basically said, yep, you've got space. It's something I could have done myself, but for peace of mind, I'd basically be able to say, if the house burned down, at least it wasn't my fault. I had a professional do it. So what you can see is here is that he ran some conduit through a wall. I basically told him, I don't care what it looks like. Just run that 40 or 50 feet that you need to do. They did a good job with that, set up the box. And you can see there, I mean, it's more or less thrown together, but it technically is professionally done. And so I sleep good at night knowing that it's all squared away in the circuit breaker box. And I think that ran me about $300 or $400. I have a whole breakdown on the write-up I did Yep, right there. Not the best with spreadsheets, but everything is included in here, including that that duck fan that I don't use. The total here at the right, $6,271, it's actually $600 less than that. The miner is $600 less than what I have listed here. I ended up getting a different unit than when I had made this spreadsheet. So all in, with the electric costs I've paid now, in cumulative, I'm in for around $6,900, and just about with today's prices, about 70% paid off in just, I think like 155 days now. I spun it up on wow. April 30th or May 1st. So I got the benefit of the Chinese mining exodus and actually spun up on the first day of a big downward difficulty adjustment.
That's awesome. And also very clutch on your part. Nicely played.
I got lucky.
This is awesome. We have a bunch more setups to go through. Misaki, I want to hand it to you next. Same sort of situation. We tried to, just for your reference, we tried to organize, you know, the photos in sort of the order that you sent them, although they may have gotten shuffled a little bit. But yeah, just sort of, we don't give a shit about the fourth wall. Talk to Damien if you want something shuffled around and he can click through a different tab for you. But yeah, the floor is yours. Once Damien throws up the pictures here, let's see what you got.
Awesome. That's just so great learning from everyone. Let's see what's up first. Oh, cool. Okay. So this was an S9i trying to get rid of the sound. I took off the fans, the stock fans. You have to run like Brains firmware or something like that so that the miner will keep mining with the fans disconnected. I think the stock firmware will shut it down. And so for immersion setups, it's pretty typical. They'll take the fans off and run them without the fans. So I got a duct fan, which still moves the 400 cubic feet of air that you need to keep that thing cool. And it's not modulated, so it's pretty much running max all the time. But being a 6-inch fan, it can run at a much lower RPM than the stock fans. And so the sound is closer to 40 or 50 decibels. And then just a shop vac air filter that fits snug. So I said, what the heck, plug it in. And it keeps the miner nice and cool. And then I 3D printed the manifold over there that couples the duct fan to the cage. So we can go to the next one. So this one is definitely one of the more recent setups where, you know, this mining hardware costs a lot of money. So I want to protect my investment. Got an air filter in there. Was really inspired by Steve's black box design. But I don't know how to work with sheet metal and things like that. So I got some fire retardant carpet underlayment in this one, and then some fire retardant spray for the plywood panels, and really threw that together in an afternoon. And it does a really good job of attenuating the sound and filtering the air. And then what I found works really well with these is I'll stick a duct fan in the mouth of the exhaust, and it doesn't quite cover the whole outlet, but that fan is then ducting the heat out of the garage, so the garage doesn't just start baking like an oven, because at, you know, 3.5 kilowatts, this is a lot of heat to deal with in any closed space. You're just going to see temperatures go until the miner turns off. And so these duct fans have thermostats on them. And so you can say, set the temp to 70 degrees and it'll suck the air out of there. And if the weather gets cold, that fan will just turn down. So it ends up being, you know, you just have a heated garage that's kind of at a pretty steady temperature. You can go to the next one. Same idea as the earlier one, just a car air filter instead of the shop vac filter. We can go to the next one. Let's go to the next one before maybe six. Yeah, this one. So I wanted to do an immersion setup for, you know, complete noise cancellation, and didn't want to have the whole thing sitting in a bath. So I thought, hey, I could just use the shell of the miner to hold as the aquarium if I cap the ends off. And so I've got a hot water pump really pumping just mineral oil through the miner. Into if you want to go to picture four, into this baseboard heater. And what I found was the miner went up to 100 degrees Celsius in a very short amount of time. These baseboard heaters just do not dissipate enough heat. So I said, hey, I've got a bunch of fans sticking around. I slapped those on there. And so I think this probably would work if you had a whole house with radiators and you wanted to do that. You could probably have a bunch of baseboard heaters, but a single 8-foot unit was not enough in ambient temperature with convection to cool the S9 without runaway temperatures. On a cool note, it hit 100 degrees Celsius and the miner still works. I mean, the oil does such a good job of sucking heat off of the chips that even at really high temperatures, the chips were fine. They didn't overheat.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, of course.
So do you think that you'd be able to like heat a pool with this if you ran like pool water pump over the coils?
I mean, I saw a guy online doing this. I don't want to steal his thunder if he's online, if he's one of these guys, but I saw he had a 15,000 gallon tank. I don't know how many miners he was pumping, but he was doing a heat exchanger, I think a liquid heat exchanger. And he was keeping that pool at 100 degrees. I mean, it was basically a hot tub. I've considered trying to take this and heat exchange with the hot tub.
Yeah.
But you're going to go way over 104 degrees Fahrenheit, which is what you want in a hot tub. And so you're going to have some kind of system to then bleed off the extra heat. So some kind of fan that kicks on and radiates this oil. Because this oil is at 100 degrees Celsius, you're boiling your hot tub. I mean, it's way too much heat.
Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah, I love it. It's dead silent, which I love. Oil stinks when it reaches 100 degrees Celsius. It reeks. So you have to have it in a sealed container. If you look on YouTube, there's a guy who puts these in those NATO ammo cans. And those are sealed well, so you don't have the fragrance.
Ammo can, huh? I'm going to try this. This is cool.
Hit me up.
Heat that? And now smells if we're mining from home. The trifecta there.
Yeah, in the last one that had the carpet lining for sound attenuation, you have to make sure you get a carpet underlayment with the low VOCs because those volatile organic compounds, when they heat up, it smells like cancer. So yeah, make sure you ventilate that. Actually now use fiberglass. So fiberglass is super inert at all temperatures, flame retardant. I put a little bit of bug netting over the fiberglass so that you don't get fibers flying in your breathing air. Cause that'll irritate your lungs. I think if you want to go to three, I think that was my first ASIC miner. Oh, no, maybe it was four. F5. Thank you. Sorry. Good producer. That was the Butterfly Labs ASIC miner. It was the first kind of loud. I think it did giga hashes, maybe 15 giga hashes or something like that. All right. Was that all the pictures?
I think that was all of them. Yeah. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Butterfly Labs is some cool retro hardware. Let's see. I lost my list here for a second. There we go. Eric, floor is yours. Misagi, that was awesome. And definitely, I was taking some notes there. Definitely some cool ideas to try out. Eric, your turn. Give Damien, 10 seconds to throw up the pictures on the screen here for a second. But I know you have a couple cool aspects to highlight on your setup and a few different pictures here. So be patient with us if we shuffled them out of order. But you're up. Go for it.
So this is the service that I put in. We originally only had 100 amp service coming to the pole barn. I called up our service provider and asked them, how much do I have available, And I could probably have up to 600 amps of service with what they bury underground. It's a lot heavier than what overhead wire would be to your house. So a lot of times guys will only have 100 to 200 amp service on overhead, where I could go with 400 amps. So that I bought that panel off Amazon and then just started putting parts together. Mostly I bought everything from, once I had that meter socket, I bought everything from Menards. And so that's a 400 amp service. We can go to the next picture. And then that's kind of what it looked like with the routing. I don't remember. That's OT4 cable, I believe. It's pretty heavy stuff. And then two 200 amp breakers. And each 200 amp breaker feeds a 200 amp panel on the inside of my shop. We can go to the next one. and those are the two 200 amp breaker or panels. We intended on run, or intend on running 20 M32s. They're 15 amp continuous draw. The end goal is to be immersion. I'm just about done building my immersion tank. It's been really hard trying to get a dry cooler for it. We've got like 210,000 BTU of heat we have to get rid of. But I was running them all air cooled. We can go to the next picture on these racks. And I just ended up, I mean, I went with these panels. I assumed I was going to use them down the line. So I just bought more 200 amp panels. And then I started setting up Baker's racks for air cooled. And then I run 4-aught aluminum to these, which seems to be plenty. We can go to the next picture. And I just started wiring them like you would. You know, it's just a 20 amp, 220 volt outlet with 10-2 wire. And that's cool enough for everything. The outlets I really don't like. If we wouldn't have bought cables that went from our miners to an outlet, I would have went more with something that I would have hardwired and went with like a 30 amp switch that wouldn't get as much high resistance. You know, it wouldn't get as hot. But I intend that these outlets will cook eventually. But we can go to the next picture. And there we are getting ready. We're starting to place them. We can go to the next one. Starting to wire it. my wiring isn't very clean. So, and then we'll go to the next. There we are. Now they're all six of them there are running. And the biggest thing is heat removal when it's set up like this. It was really hard to get enough airflow through my barn to pull all that heat out. My dad closed my doors on me one day and I got out there and that whole pole barn was like 140 degrees. It was crazy. Every one of the miners were complaining. We can go to the next picture. And that's just another, you can see all the power cables. Eventually we ended up routing them power cables away from the intakes because even that little bit of air disruption was causing us trouble. So we try to keep the intakes as clean as possible. And then obviously it's in a pole barn. It's dusty. We, you know, clean them. It doesn't take us long to pull the fans off and clean them once a month. We can go to the next picture. And then that's the one I set up downstairs. I put a smaller, I think that's 100 amp box on that side just to run a couple extra miners. So I wasn't putting everything. And then what I try to do is I balance the power load in each panel and then in between each both panels. You know, I don't want to be pulling, I don't want to single phase anything and I don't want to pull too hard off of one leg. So you just try and keep mindful of what you're pulling off of each side. And then we run an Orbi Wi-Fi system that's good for 5,000 square feet. So I have the Wi-Fi set up in my house. I have Wi-Fi on everything, all my cell phones, everybody that comes over. And then that's out in the pole barn. And that runs, I think we were running 12 or 15 miners off of that alone. And then we hardwire it from the Orbi up to an Ethernet switch and then just break it down to each miner from there. You can go to the next one, see what the next one is. Yeah, you can see two of them with the red there. They're not too happy about airflow. And then there they are running at night. It's kind of a cool picture. I had a video of booting them all up, and it sounds so cool when they're all coming online, but I could not find that video.
Yeah, it always sounds really awesome when they start kicking into action there. So I actually have a follow-up question for both you and Misagi. When you're looking at immersion, what are some tips and tricks for people to think of? On the last slideshow, we saw that you capped both ends and put mineral fluid through it, which is pretty innovative. And then you said that you're trying to build an immersion setup here, Eric. So Eric, maybe we'll start with you just talking about like how to think about immersion mining at home.
So I'm going with I have a lot of heat to remove and it's not really something I would want to try again. Just because of the size of the dry cooler it takes to remove it all. They're actually three phase pumps. Even though I only have single phase power, you run them through a VFD and you can control the speed of the pump. So I've got 50 gallon per minute, 2-inch supply and 2-inch, discharge pumps that I'm going to be running. And one's going to be on one side of a plate heat exchanger that's actually rated for 300,000 BTU. And then the other one's going to be on the other, on the other side, on the glycol side. So then even though on the coolant side, on the BitCool side, the oil side, it'll be running a slower gallon per minute. I'm going to turn that way down. So I'm not overfeeding my tank and I'm not cavitating my suction, but I'm still keeping the whole system flowing. But you get your more efficiency on the glycol side, the faster and the more fluid you can move. So I'm going to run that at the complete 50 gallons per minute through the heat exchanger. And then it should only be a 65 or 70 kW heat exchanger. I'm going to source whatever I can find. If I have to buy 100 kilowatt, I will. We actually have a DCX system coming for about 100 amps. And I've got 100 amps extra service in my basement. So I'm going to end up trying that. That'll probably end up happening before I get my system done. But I'm just about done with my tank. I've got like a 400 gallon tank. I've bulkheaded and I'm baffling. And that'll be for the major amount of miners.
Misagi, any follow-up thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think when you're doing immersion, you could be doing it for a couple of reasons. I think Eric is big time. He's probably going to overclock his machines, and that's why he's doing immersion, just because you can run them so much. You can put so much more energy into them without them overheating.
The neighbors didn't like the sound.
So, acoustics. Yeah. So for me, it was definitely acoustics. I wanted to get rid of the sound. The overclocking would be just a nice benefit, but he's Eric's big time. I mean, I wasn't doing anything that fancy. But I like the idea of using wastewater, but again, it was just too much heat for domestic applications. Continuous 3 kilowatts of heat is just beyond any kind of real domestic use other than heating your house in the dead of winter. So unless you have a large body of water that you can dump that heat into, like a lake or a river, I think those would be really good for cooling. You're going to be running huge loud fans. And so you're kind of back to square one to cool those things down. You're running, you know, big volumes of air again, unless you have such large radiators that the sound is less annoying than the stock fans. But yeah, man, I'm jealous of all the power you have, Eric. That is a lot of current.
It's almost an industrial sized farm there. It's beautiful pictures. Thanks for sending those, Eric. I did want to jump in really quick, circling back. We're talking about heating pools. I could be mistaken, but I think the video we're talking about pictures are from Coin Heated, working on that sort of stuff. And that was a pretty large pool they're heating. So anybody watching with, a massive at-home pool like that, definitely pump your heat and have a nice little like spa type setup there.
One bit of feedback, Eric. I've had similar issues trying to vent garages, and if I just try to vent the window and not couple that directly to the output of the miner, what I'm doing is I'm removing like dilute heat, and so the fan sucking exhaust out of the garage is not moving a lot of energy. It's moving diluted energy. It's like carrying 12 karat gold instead of carrying 24 karat gold. With the same amount of effort, you can move a lot more value. If you ducted those fans to the outside, if you ducted your miners to the outside, you'd be moving the high temperature heat out of the barn. And so I think you'd be able to get the temps a lot lower in the barn than if you just had like a ceiling vent or something like that.
I did find that eventually that if I actually just brought the dimension of the garage door down to the size of the intake fan and the outlet fan, it would move the air through the barn a lot more efficiently. And I, even in 90 degree temps that we had here this summer, I didn't have any more problems, but it took a couple months for me to figure it out.
Very cool. Okay, we're going to move right along to Callie next. Callie, you know the drill. Give Damien a couple seconds here to throw it up.
I was told this was going to be a home mining. You put me between two immersion guys. Like, hey, let me hop on my tricycle and explain my my mining setup. Oh, okay. What you're looking at actually is the ceiling joists in my little mining room. And what I'm picturing here is obviously this is my two S9s. I have them in the same duct, and I've got put a fan on there at the bottom left. You can kind of see that. I did this because I couldn't cut another hole in my house. I couldn't bring myself to it. These S9s have paid for themselves many times over. And, you know, they're still, I think both of them are running around 98. So they seem to, you know, take a licking and just keep ticking. So I've left them there, but you can kind of see between the joists. This is the, what happens when your wife's on the deck at 3 a.m, you're stuffing mineral soundproof, fireproof, insulation between the joists. So it did help, but it hasn't alleviated it in general. So I may double this up a little bit, but after talking with some of the people here, I think I may just move to an inline fan on some of these because I think it's going to push more, more, you know, air through. And then if you see this to the right, this is where I'm going to puncture in to my outlet for my heat for my house. So I think I'm going to try to punch through here and at least probably hook these two S9s who, you know, tend to push up against each other. Okay. Right into this, this ductwork and, you know, push that through my house this winter. So for the longest time, my entire basement has been an unfinished kind of, we call it the room of doom, which is kids, scooters, tricycles, bikes, and they've just been a big circle. So running miners and heating it down there like that has been wonderful. But that isn't going to fly now that I have an enclosed room where I've put everything. So we can kind of move to the next picture. And this is kind of like what it looks like. Like everybody, I got a lot of fans and this, we a bunch of kid toys in here. And you can kind of see, I've got my two S9s there on the bottom. And then I was actually fortunate enough in the big, you know, Bitcoin mining band of 2021 for, you know, China. In July, I picked up that M21S for $2,200. So I was really kind of psyched about that. But I think it was Bob maybe that mentioned it, or I can't remember who it was. They kick off a lot more heat and they are a lot louder. And, you know, immediately, it was pretty immediate that one, it is a little bit more temperamental. So I had to cut its own little outlet and I really have to keep some ambient air moving around it because I didn't want to cut a 5-inch hole, you know, so I went down to 4. And if I keep a fan on it, it tends to run around 69 degrees Celsius, which it's happy with and everybody's okay. But, you know, it noise is my biggest problem as well as heat. And I still kind of will have a heat buildup in there if I close the door for longer than say 6 hours, just from the power units. And I think I'm really going to put one of those inline fans on the front and get rid of the stock fans. And I think that'll push more air through and cut down on the sound, which would make my wife happier, which would make my life better. So there's that. And this is just when I set it up originally, again, this wall to the right was not here. As you can see, I'm a leap first, look later kind of guy. And when I talked with, you know, this entire panel on the right was put on after the fact. So I added that knowing that we're going to finish the basement eventually. And then I had, my electrician, because we have 200 amp service here, add three, you know, NEMA 6P outlets, each one on a 20 amp breaker. So, you know, I've got a little bit of service there. I don't know how much more I put in my house just because we've got a lot of other things drawing, but it tends to work pretty well. And I usually, this is a space where your breakers are that you're not going to finish, or, you know, you've got service coming into the house that's pretty close. So I figured eventually if I ever wanted to move anything exterior, it was a short dive outward. And then if I wanted to keep everything unfinished, I'd be able to stay pretty close to these outlets. So that's kind of what's happening in that picture.
One follow up there really quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
When your wife goes down and looks at your breaker box, what is her reaction?
She doesn't. She stays out of this room. She hates this room, really. I mean, my mother-in-law literally came over the other day because we had to hang out in our basement. There's TVs and stuff down there now. And she's like, where's the volume for these? I mean, that was the question. And I'm like, don't touch them. You know, I just closed the door and I'm like, okay, we'll open it back up when people leave. But, you know, the one thing I would say about mining to anybody listening, I mean, they're honestly, I'm impressed. And I feel just, you know, honored to be involved with some of the other miners here and some of the things they're doing. But what I would say to everybody out there that's maybe on the fence is, you know, I still think 30% of hash rate is S9s. And I you know, there, it's not outside the scope. I think a lot of people will tell you that, you know, Bitcoin mining is an economies of scale, which it is, and that home miners can be pushed out. But it is for noobs or people newer to this, or people you're trying to orange pill. It's the most tangible thing in Bitcoin. They understand, like, hey, you're trying to process transactions. You get a reward for it. It's, and then from there, you know, now what do I do with my rewards? I have to set up, you know, hardware wallet or wallet somewhere to, you know, move these coins out. And then from there, well, if you're sending coins to your own hardware wallet, you know, you want to get a node. And I think, you know, it's great, some of the things people do with Raspberry Pi, but let's not overthink this. Just get a laptop. Put Bitcoin Core on there. If you're not using it for all the time, you don't have to have it up 100% of the time. And I think it's a great way to start. And I can tell you, I had no really forethought other than I wanted Bitcoin mine. And I mean, I was one of the guys that did Hashflare. Okay. So I mean, I knew it was a scam. I ended up being okay from it. But I mean, that's just to give you an idea where I'm coming from through this thing. I think it's, you know, get a qualified electrician, have them look at your service, how much you have to spare. And you know, you don't have to start huge, start small and work up from there. And I think from as your comfort level goes and just the nature of Bitcoin increasing in value over time, yeah, sometimes you're going to be better off, you know, buying the sats straight out. Absolutely. But I think a lot of times you end up, you know, with like the S9s, 4 years of service here, I've more than paid for these, you know, and I think with what I got that 21S for, I think over time I'm going to be okay as well. And especially if you're, you know, mining is just as speculative as buying on an exchange. You know, if you're expecting price to go up, you know, over time, then you can expect your earnings over time and USD value at least to go up. And I think one thing that's really important for everybody to kind of remember, to those people that maybe aren't as deep down the rabbit hole as we are, is that it's just that KYC is going to be important. It's not something I thought about early on. It's something that's important to me now. And I think we can start the other group off that way. It's going to be even better off, especially with the IRS talking about, you know, monitoring transactions over $600. So, all right, there's my pitch there. We can go to the next one if you want, and I'll try to wrap it up quick.
No, so, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Sorry, Damien, can you go back to picture four for a second? I just want to comment on that really quick. Like, I know we have, like I said, we have a variety of people with setups on this show. One reason why I wanted you on, specifically Callie, is because, like, I was shitposting on Twitter one time, wanted to see, like, a bunch of my followers' setups, what they're working with. And I specifically remember this picture because, like, you know, you have a few machines here, but it's just like very clean and simple. Like, you just look at that setup and you're like, that's clean. Like, I can manage that. It's doable for anyone who like wants to start like with a few machines, very simple, small scale setup. Like, that is just, I love that picture. Very clean setup. So 10 out of 10 for me, even if it's not like, you know, you're not doing anything fancy with immersion or whatever. I'm a big fan of your setup. So yeah. Just wanted to show that.
If my wife finds out that immersion's an option, the sound thing, I think I'll probably be learning a little bit more here soon. So, and then the last one, this is just what the outlets look like. You know, I tend the tool man to the first one, and I'm like, I'm going to get the strongest metal outlet valve. And, you know, the weight of the door on it will, I think it creates a little bit more resistance in line. So when I went with the M21, I just went with the standard plastic, and it has a little cage in there to keep, you know, critters or whatever from crawling up there. And then the third one to the far right is my dryer out for, you know, our dryer. So I couldn't stomach putting a fourth hole in the house. So that's kind of what it looks like. Hasn't killed the bush yet. It's hidden. And I think that's a video too. And it's not too loud. The neighbors don't say a word. It helps dissipate the heat quite a bit. But like I said earlier, I'm still working on the sound.
That's awesome. I guess we couldn't quite get that video to play. But
not missing much.
Okay. Well, thanks for running us through that. This is awesome, guys. We're a little bit over an hour here. So thanks for sticking around with us, for y'all on the show and for everyone watching. We have another awesome setup to get through. Last but definitely not least, from Econo Alchemist. And I intentionally put his last because he actually is going to show us, if we have pictures sorted well, sort of like an iteration. He went through a couple different versions of his setup. Econo Alchemist, these are actually, that's not in the order. These are supposed to, maybe that's reverse order, in the order of how you sent them to me. But let's just, you know, go through them and see how it shakes out. Oh, yeah. Picture one, that it probably is the first. Go ahead. Floor is yours.
Thanks. You guys, it's awesome seeing all the resourceful solutions you guys have put together. It's just great. You know, no home situation is going to be identical to anyone else's home situation. And, you know, but everyone's going to be dealing with heat and noise, and the solutions are limitless. So it's just great to see all the creativity. You know, in my home situation, I had a spare bedroom in my basement. And this is what it ended up being like. This is my second iteration, and my most recent one. You know, I had started with a single ASIC, but then when the hash rate crash happened, like at the end of June, I saw that as a golden opportunity to invest into a more robust mining setup. And so I got a few more ASICs at that time. And this is, or if you go back to that last picture, this is the enclosure that I came up with for those ASICs. You know, you can see on the right hand side there where I ran in a dedicated 90 amp circuit and then wired that to 6 outlets. And then on the left, you can't really see the outlets, but you can see the cables coming up from the left side. I actually have another dedicated 30 amp circuit on that side for 2 of them. So my original intention with this enclosure was to run 8 ASICs inside of it. And you can kind of see through that window that they're not sitting horizontally, they're sitting vertically. And I had created a pressure barrier to separate the cool air intake side, which is going through those furnace filters. And then the hot exhaust air actually kind of goes up through that cavity and out a window that's inside of that enclosure that has a gable fan installed. So that, you know, that was that setup. And actually at this time, that's all been torn out. I had to shut down my operation because we decided to sell our house and move out of the city. So I think I had sent you a time-lapse video of the teardown on that too. But yeah, if you want to scroll through any of those pictures, I can talk about any of them. I think I had sent you some pictures all the way back to my original setup. This one here is me holding the power line cable that goes from the utility provider's pole behind my house to my meter on my house. And at the time I had ordered my ASICs, you know, I had to start thinking about how I was going to build out this new 90 amp circuit to power more ASICs. So I had gotten in touch with an engineer at my utility provider, and I wanted to make sure that I really had a 200 amp service ran to my house, because I noticed the cables up above, the cable that's in my hand, was only a 4 gauge cable. And, you know, based on what I understood, the 4 gauge cable wasn't going to handle 200 amps. It could handle 100 amps. So I got in touch with an engineer at the utility provider, and they assured me 100% I had a 200 amp service. And, you know, that home was built in the 1960s. Well, somewhere between then and now, their records got mixed up, and I do not have a 100 amp service running to my home. I don't have a 200 amp service running to my home. I have a 100 amp service running to my home. So when I built my circuit and started pulling over 100 amps, a couple days into that continuous load, the lines going from the utility pole to the house were the weak link in that chain. And they ended up catching on fire. My wife gave me a call while I was at work, you know, and as soon as she saw the fire happening on that power line, she ran downstairs and killed the breaker and shut the ASICs off, and then gave me a call, and I rushed home and then got the utility company out there to replace it. And we were back up that night, but it was pretty stressful. So
absolute hero. That's just goat, man.
Did the utility company get mad at you?
No, they're really cool about it. They're just like, you know what happened? And I was like, well, you know, I'm running, think of it like a data center in my basement. I have a lot of computers drawing a lot of power. And I told him, I was only running like 135 amps. I shouldn't have fried the wires. And I asked him, I'm like, while you're replacing that line, can you just upgrade it to a real 200 amp service? And the lineman was like, he looked at me and he's like, this is a 200 amp service. And I'm like, no, dude, I was only pulling 130 amps. Like, what do you mean? And he looked at me and he says, we have leg one, leg two, and you have 100 amps on each leg. And I thought he was joking, because like the voltage does, like whether you're pulling 100 amps at 120 volts or 100 amps at 240 volts, it's 100 amps, you know? So I was just completely blown away by the shift in terminology between the utility company and myself, and you know, what's standard in the industry. But
the lesson to me is that 100 amp service can apparently handle 135, which is very encouraging, because I have a 200 amp service and I've been hesitant to go over 80% of that 160 amps, but right. Maybe I could push that to 200 and just stay away from 260.
Well, I'd be really careful. So, you know, when I had originally wired this all in, I had ignored that 80% rule. And so when I was running all eight ASICs, the circuit breakers I had on the wall were getting so hot that I couldn't even put my hand on them. And so when I realized that I had ignored the 80% rule and gone over that, and that I was now running the risk of actually burning up the wires in my home, I decided to take two ASICs offline at that time. And then I was just running six in that enclosure, and that, you know, that cooled down the circuit breakers, and I was comfortable enough with that. But then after about a day and a half, 2 days of that, then the overhead lines burnt up. So yeah, you can see in that picture there, that was, you know, how I was supposed to have all eight of them situated inside the enclosure. But that's, you know, really real, nice. Real simple construction, you know, just got some 1x2s and some of the like 1-inch insulation board and a gable fan. Like, I bought everything at Home Depot.
These are awesome pictures. It's a awesome setup there.
What's the size on your fan?
That picture there is, you know, when I designed my initial enclosure, when I just had one ASIC, I really wanted to make sure the enclosure wasn't going to make my sound problem worse with what's called standing waves. So I took a recording of the ASIC running and then kind of zoomed in on what the problem frequencies were, and it was 720 hertz. And so what you can do is you can figure out what the wavelength of that sound is, and then you can make sure that none of the dimensions of your enclosure are the same dimensions of that wavelength, because if they are the same dimensions, then you actually run the risk of amplifying that sound. So you just want to make sure your dimensions don't match the wavelength of the frequencies that you're trying to mitigate. And so when I had built my first enclosure, it's probably somewhere toward the front of the line of pictures there. But, you know, my first enclosure, none of the surfaces are parallel. They're all angled, and none of the dimensions match the wavelengths of those frequencies.
That's some next level stuff right there.
This comes from like a hydroponic store, this inline fan. It's a 6-inch fan. I forget the CFM on it. It might've said on the box, but you know, these inline fans are great. They have a metal housing. It'll just run 24/7, no problem. I put that on the exhaust side just to try and help get as much heat out as possible. So this is what that room looked like after I got my first setup installed, and you can see my enclosure down there on the floor. And then the intake and exhaust both going through the same window in that inline fan on the exhaust side. And then, you know, I wanted to put in an air filter and then minimize the number of holes that were going in and out of the enclosure, because you can create a perfectly acoustic treatment box. But the problem is now you have to punch some holes in it. So as soon as you put those holes in it, you start getting sound to escape. So I was trying to minimize the number of holes in the enclosure. That's why I put those panel mount adapters in there for the cables. That's the exterior of the home. I built a diffuser on the exhaust side. You know, pretty simple stuff. There was just a window there. Took the window out, put in some plywood, drilled a couple holes through it. Just tried to make the box as, you know, form-fitting to the ASIC as possible. 150 degrees at the output fan, 95 decibels right up against the fan. That's pretty loud. That's like roughly the equivalent of standing about 10 feet away from the track when a freight train's going by. That's the electrical panel on the outside of my home. you know, and that panel really taught me that you want to hire a licensed electrician. I had used an electrician who was not licensed, and they left my panel in a very unsafe condition and did horrible work, did multiple instances of damage inside my home. So about halfway through the project, I fired that guy and ended up finishing everything myself. And that's the result of my work. And that's what you're looking at right there. So this is where the meter goes before the main panel of my home. And that exposed wire there in the middle is the neutral line. This is how I found the wires after I fired the electrician and pulled my meter out. Because what was happening inside my home is every time we flipped on the dishwasher or the garbage disposal, all the lights in the house would flicker. And I couldn't figure out for the life of me what was going on. And I ended up going in the backyard, pulled that meter out of there, and realized that there was no neutral connection. And so what happens when there's not a neutral is that you get these imbalanced loads on your house. So if you have more accessories running on one leg than you do on the other leg, then that load imbalance is what was causing the lights to flicker. And the concern there is that if that load gets too unbalanced, that's when you actually start getting accessories inside your home that catch fire. That's the state of the panel that the electrician left for me. And again, I'm using the term electrician here very loosely. The guy was a complete jerk.
Looks very nice.
So lesson there, get a licensed electrician.
That's a great and also very important takeaway. Econo-Alchemist, sorry that some of the pictures there got a little bit shuffled, but huge shout out to Damien for managing all this media for us. We're well over an hour here, but this is honestly the more fun, probably the most fun live streams, not to knock any of our prior guests that we've done so far. Guys, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your afternoons to chat with us. Will and I have had a ton of fun based on the conversation in the comments and on Twitter. Everyone else has enjoyed watching. This is another quick reminder. All these guys are on Twitter and create content around their mining operations in various volumes on other platforms as well. So definitely give them a follow. I'm sure they wouldn't mind if a couple of you reach out with questions. And again, there are chat rooms and communities all across the internet with people like these guys who have various types and ranges of sophistication in terms of their at-home setups, who are, you know, who have been given help themselves and are eager to give help to other miners setting up their own rigs. So reach out to them. Don't set your house on fire. Try and figure out what you're doing and ask someone who knows if you can't figure it out yourself. But that's a wrap for today. Like and subscribe to our channel if you like this video. It helps other miners find this content. It makes us feel good about ourselves too. Guys, you've been amazing guests. All these pictures and videos have been fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the Compass live stream this afternoon. I'll have to do it again sometime. This has been a ton of fun, seriously. So thank you, and that's a wrap for today.